Recent developments in Lansing have included the passage of Return to Learn legislation outlining guidelines for K-12 school districts to safely return to instruction this fall. A controversy over Governor Gretchen Whitmer's reappointment of a member of the Michigan Tax Tribunal and revenue estimates showing a pandemic-related budget shortfall that's not looking to be as bad as originally predicted. Today on WNMU-TV's Media Meet, we'll hear from 109th District State Representative Sarah Cambenzi with her thoughts on these issues and more. Welcome to Media Meet. I'm your host, Walt Lindela. Today, our guest is 109th District Democratic State Representative Sarah Cambenzi of Marquette. On the media panel via Zoom, we have Lisa Bowers, staff writer with the Marquette Mining Journal, and Nick Friend, reporter with WLUC-TV6. Welcome all.
Thank you.
We start off, Sarah, with a question today about the Return to Learn legislation. It recently was passed. It outlines steps to get Michigan's K-12 school districts back in session this fall with the pandemic. The bills went through the Republican-controlled House and the Senate very quickly and were signed by the governor into law. You did not vote in favor of the bills. Why not?
I think coming from public education, before I was a state legislature, later I spent 10 years working in the public schools and working specifically with adult and community education, where we had a hybrid program and we did in-person and online learning and were successful at doing it the way the rules were. So having that experience and seeing us change around the School Aid Act, it just made no sense for me. And at the end of the day, when we heard from our superintendents and our school boards that they weren't at the table when we were making this legislative change, it made me question, who are we doing this for?
Was there something in the legislation that you would have preferred to have seen than what was actually laid out?
I think one of the things was certainly the virtual learning. We basically wiped out all protections for public schools that if it's considered pandemic learning, like we're going to have this year, anyone can basically start up a virtual school and offer courses, and as long as they're accredited with the state, they can basically not only take our students away, but take that state funding, it's about $8,000 per student away.
You mentioned that you found out that there really weren't a lot of administrators, teachers involved in this process. How did that happen?
You know, I think, well, we were working on this legislation, and again, it was a very small group of legislators downstate. Our superintendents were busy talking to themselves and saying, what are we going to do with neighboring districts to make sure that we're not pulling each other's students away if one school, you know, opts for all online and one school opts all in person? And so they really did a great job working together and certainly working with the parents and students of the district to make sure that they could do it and do it safely, and it was what they wanted.
Now, the interesting development on it is your colleague in the Senate, Senator Ed McBroom of Dickinson County, who is a Republican, you're a Democrat, also voted against these bills, saying that they had some major issues in his opinion. What's your reaction to him voting that way?
You know, Ed and I oftentimes think alike on issues like this, and certainly with his background being in music education, my background is actually in art education, mm-hmm. With a math minor. I think we both saw the changes coming to the School Aid Act saying, wait a minute, most legislators haven't been in the classroom. Time out, what are we doing? And so I think he saw it through the same eyes I did as having that background in training and education.
I know with some of our colleagues here, they have some other questions to follow up on that. So I open it up to our media colleagues on Zoom here today. And if anybody has any questions, feel free to jump in right now with Representative Cambenzi.
Representative Cambenzi, this is a time that's challenging for all schools. And I was wondering about the CARES Act funding for schools. And do you think it was fairly distributed, and why or why not?
You know, I think one of the biggest complaints I've heard about all pandemic funding is really in the time frame we have to get it out, do we have the best tools to really analyze and use it appropriately? And I would say no. Anytime you're rushed with spending, it's very difficult to get it out. So I think the governor, you know, with agreement from our minority and majority leaders in both the House and Senate, came up with the free and reduced lunch to kind of make sure that the school districts and the students that needed it most would get it. There's disagreement among that, but I think at this point, especially knowing that our state budget next year isn't going to be quite as bad, I think we just have to move on at this point and make sure that we fully fund our schools with the amount that they're actually waiting to get.
Representative, we've heard from some superintendents. I've talked to the NICE district, the Marquette district, who said they're simply short on funding when you add in additional costs like online learning, hand sanitizers, and masks. What would you say to those superintendents who say we don't have enough money at this point?
You know, we're just now starting to negotiate the budget for this coming year, and so all of that is going to be taken into consideration. But of course, like any local government making decisions, there's only so much money, you know, in that pot of money. And so it's, you know, making the decisions of, do we fund schools more? Do we fund local government less? Do we fund some of our state departments less? So the negotiations now are going to be kind of knowing what the needs are going forward with our schools and then seeing where we can make those adjustments. And we've already held off on hiring a lot of positions, filling a lot of positions in state government. So we have recognized that savings, but again, we're just starting those negotiations, and I would say that from what I've heard, it looks like we are going to appropriate some more money for those expenses.
Speaking about the budget and budget shortfalls in particular, state officials announced that the projected coronavirus pandemic-related state budget shortfall was going to be about $6.3 billion over the next 2 years, but now it may not be as bad, that they recently just said that it's looking at $3.4 billion. Of course, that is still a serious shortfall, but what happened to get us to have that kind of a downward a change?
I mean, when you stop spending and you certainly stop employment, you know, right there, the revenue coming into the state, whether it's spending, whether it's your income taxes or whatever, business taxes, it's a tremendous cut, and that's why, you know, even for 3 months before we had a partial startup again of our economy, we were hit so hard with the money coming in. And we saw that month by month. But also what we saw starting in June was that the revenue estimates were actually a little bit low and people were spending. The economy was moving a little bit faster, which is good news. And so right now going into this budget session over the next month, we're looking at about a $1.1 billion revenue shortfall versus that $3 billion that we were expecting.
And some of the things that were talked about with that were that people actually during the pandemic were spending money, and a lot of the things that were not taxed but were leisure time activities weren't happening. That was a factor then, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
It's been interesting to see that happen. What does this mean now with the budget process moving forward?
I think it's going to be easier. Anytime you have less of a shortfall to work with, both sides can kind of come together, and it seems like we're willing to make concessions in areas more than we would if it was $3 billion. So I have a positive outlook going forward, and I think, you know, we've actually started these budget negotiations, you know, back in April. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of prepared to go into this budget session a little more prepared and a little more willing to work out the issues.
All right. Well, go ahead, Lisa.
Speaking of budget, my interest in the tax tribunal as we go forward, and the recent appointment that Governor Whitmer made to that. Could you speak a little bit about that appointment and your opposition to it?
Sure. Most of us, whether you're in local government or certainly state government, you've been watching the Escanaba versus Menard case very closely. And a lot of local government money went into this, so a lot of taxpayer money. We actually had the Treasury, State Treasury Department, put in $250,000 towards this case as well, realizing that the state is actually losing quite a bit of money every time these big box stores dispute their tax amounts. So the disappointment is that it just further erodes the tax base of local government. And with state government being unable to step in and really make that up for them, They're at a loss. And so they can either raise property taxes, cut services, whether it's police, fire, anything that they do locally affects our schools. They get a piece of that with their millages that they have, and then our libraries.
And the issue here is that it was Victoria Enyart who was reappointed by the governor for another term, and she has been pretty obstinate in changes to the Michigan Tax Tribunal process. Yes. You must have contacted the governor's office and said, hey, wait a minute, do we want to, what did they tell you?
They said, you know, they really hadn't heard anything negative about her. And again, you know, this comes from, you know, someone who's been very interested, who has supported legislation to overturn this, and who comes from local government. That's part of my background as well. And knowing how much local government is hurting from this. I mean, one dark store, the last one that we had that filed in Marquette Township, it was over $130,000 a year that the township was now not going to be receiving. And that is quite a bit of money.
State Senator Ed McBroom, once again, we bring him up because he did kind of the same thing in the Senate. He voiced some serious concerns with that, and I know he has a role that he can play. I'm curious in terms of what you two could do working together, maybe to slow this appointment or stop it.
I think, you know, right now, because it's in the Senate's hands to confirm the appointment by the governor, really, Ed has the lead on this in terms of talking to his colleagues. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be tough. They already went against the governor a few times this year on appointments, which is not the norm. But certainly there's a lot of interest groups behind this. You have the Michigan Chamber that's adamantly opposed, who represents these groups. And you know, you have a lot of business groups around Lansing that certainly you know, the tax breaks they see as a positive thing for their clients. So the real push really can actually start to happen with local government. And that's where you're going to see our Marquette County officials get very involved. They've already been contacting the governor. They've already been contacting the counties where the other senators come from to see if they can put pressure on them to vote no.
Checking to see if anyone has any follow-up questions. All right. Now, one of the other things that I know you've been actively working on is a piece of legislation that has to do with allocating funding to allow for enforcement of keeping our areas clean, tourism areas. It's related to the numbers being up this year. Even though there hasn't been much going on with events, there have been people coming to the Upper Peninsula, and there's been a lot of reports of damage and trash and so on and so forth being left. You've got something in the works. What is it?
So House Bill 4590 is a bill that actually looks at putting an excise tax on all transient rooms above and beyond what we're already doing through the Michigan Visitors Bureau, through a lot of the other work done by the MEDC and certainly Pure Michigan. And we started to research this when we found that counties like Elger that have typically a 9,000 roughly year-round population see upwards of 450,000 to 600,000 people coming through in the summertime, let alone those in the winter, and pulling from their resources. So the tax base of the residents supports, you know, 9,000 people living in that county. But when you bring in these tourists, there simply isn't the public safety, the eyes and the ears, and the equipment needed to really be able to handle that.
So what would be, what is the general tenor of this? Does it seem to be getting any traction?
I think it's very popular among the county commissioners. It would have to go to a vote. And I will say that surrounding Great Lakes states all are allowed to have these local countywide taxes that they can put and put to certain areas to account for this. Michigan is the only state where the locals don't get any money. And that's something that's, it's a touchy subject for the visitors convention. But at the same time, we're not touching their money. And because we're not just going to put this excise tax on our hotels, we're actually putting it on the Airbnbs, they have a chance to actually do the same thing and even increase their revenue. So really, it's a positive thing, but when you look at the public safety aspect of it, you know, residents don't have to give up the service they pay for and expect for tourists coming in. The tourists will then be able to pay for the services that they're utilizing.
A quick note for you that we are speaking with 109th District State Representative Sarah Cambenzi of Marquette. On our media panel via Zoom, we have Lisa Bowers, staff writer with the Marquette Mining Journal, and Nick Friend, reporter with WLUC TV6. I open it up to you guys if you have questions to jump on in for Representative Cambenzi.
So for the bill that you just introduced, is that, how will those funds be allocated? To what policing agencies have you drilled down to that at this point?
So right now we have it written that the taxes will be collected locally. They could also be collected at the state level and then distributed back to each county. So it's really going to depend on what the favorite way to do this is from the counties and certainly other legislators, but it could be done either way, and it's written broad enough that it doesn't box the counties in to where they have to use it for police or they have to use it for search and rescue. You know, one thing we've been talking to City Manager Mike Angeli about is, how do you put more boots on the ground at Presque Isle, where they're having all sorts of parking issues and people walking and going on certain places that is eroding the landscape?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative, there's been a lot of talk about the governor's response to COVID-19. I'd love to get your perspective on this. What have you thought of her response to the pandemic so far?
You know, there's no doubt in my mind that her swift and, stiff stance on it has saved lives. But there's certainly been parts of it that I haven't agreed with, you know, the fishing ban and certainly the travel ban back and forth to camps was one that our office got bombarded with. But I will say that I think we're on the right path. Michigan has been able to restart our economy and not see those outbreaks near as much as other states. And she was responsive at the end of May when we sat down with her and we brought our hospitals and we brought our small businesses, our universities to the table and said, we really want to try a partial reopening. Will you let our region go first? And that was a huge positive for the UP. In fact, I think it saved a lot of our small businesses right now who wouldn't otherwise make it if they were still shut down this summer.
And what about small business funding? Speaking of that, there's been a lot of little shirt tail, and it seems like not enough funding is coming into any part of Michigan, but the Upper Peninsula especially, it seems like, there's a very small piece of the pie to be had. What can you say about that?
You know, I think we've been in touch, especially with Senator Peters, with the federal money that certainly was allocated to small business and going to a lot of companies that weren't considered small in terms of rural America. He's well aware of that, and I think it's one of the hangups that they're working through right now at the federal level. But at the state level, before we broke at the end of June, we did pass another $100 million to go specifically for small businesses in Michigan with an emphasis on women-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses, and rural businesses. So I think those awards, up to $20,000, they're not loans, they're actually grants. So there was a big interest in that. We saw a lot of people from the 109th District and the entire UP apply for those, and they're very grateful. So we'll hear soon just how much money is coming up here. We know it's gonna be over $3 million, but certainly, hopefully that'll help some of these businesses, you know, make it through the fall and winter.
Yeah, very challenging for most of the small businesses right now, because there has been some back and forth with some of these executive orders. You mentioned that a little early on that you had issues with some of them. It's not tied to an executive order, but I have to ask you, for some it may seem a little bit flip, but not having high school football, for example, this fall here, not only in Upper Michigan, but across the state,
You're from Marquette. What do you think of that? I mean, it's not a very popular decision, and it seems like it's left people really wondering how these decisions are being made. It makes sense for parts of downstate, but here in the UP, as we are in a region that is in, at this point, as of taping, is at phase five in the six-phase plan, it seems like there could have been some give and take there. What do you think?
You know, I think certainly with the Michigan High School Sports Association, you know, they have to look at the whole state, and so it's a little difficult with football. You actually have teams playing each other, and who do you play if most of the teams that you either play during the season or during playoffs reside downstate? And that's the issue that we're facing up here with football. We also have stuff going on with hockey and junior hockey for a lot of the students and kids in the Marquette area. And I know they're looking at best practices other states are using in rural areas and just asking, for it to be reconsidered, especially so that they have some certainty with playoffs and tournaments that they have scheduled. So it's an ongoing conversation. I think you've got parents that are diligent and wanna do it right and wanna do it safely. And it's just gonna come down to negotiating, I think, with a lot of our local officials and you know, certainly people that make those decisions.
Okay, let's move on. I have a quick question for you, Sarah. Early on in the pandemic, I talked to you a lot, and we were getting updates from you as to what was going on. There was a mess with unemployment benefits. You very diplomatically voiced frustrations at that point. Where are we now in terms of unemployment benefits getting to people that are affected? Have you seen improvement from early on in the pandemic? Have the changes that the UIA has made have worked?
There's still a backup. There's still a backlog. And I would say, in just talking to my front desk staff who handles most of the cases, he's still spending roughly about 70% of his time helping with unemployment claims. Now that we are going to go into another $300 PUA from the federal government, we're worried we're going to see this all over again. And it's going to be a shorter time frame that the money is available and a little less certainty in terms of how we're going to deal with this and get it out and who qualifies. So it hasn't been resolved. It's still a mess. And it's something that, again, I think we could combat so much of this if we just reopened our offices like the Secretary of State and tried to do appointments only, because some of this stuff really is easy to fix. It's just we don't have the access as state legislators in our offices to go into the system and fix it.
Okay. Is there another way that could be used to handle it, though, other than the appointment only at the Secretary of State? Do you think that more you need to have to, for lack of a better term, more boots on the ground, more people on the phone, that sort of thing? I mean, in order to get this done, more funding.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is I don't really know if more funding right now would help. I think what we need to do is go to an online scheduling system where either by phone, or if you certainly have a more complicated case. And again, the software we're using can decipher whether or not, it's a non-monetary issue that's fairly easy to take care of quickly, or if it's a more detailed, in-depth one that someone has to really dig into and look at. We can tell that already. So to make the system work better and more efficiently, if they would just do online scheduling, whether it's in person, or through the phone, I think that would really move the cases along and certainly get people their money faster.
Do you think the offices could be opened up here in the UP, that more things, more services for unemployment available because of our phase that we're in?
Absolutely. And that's, again, I know it's easy for us as legislators to advocate for that, harder for the governor to say, I'm going to allow certain regions to do something and others not. But we really feel that it's an advantage we have being rural and not seeing as many cases and hot spots, that we really do need to try and find these efficiencies and ask for the privilege to do so.
We have a few minutes left here before we wrap up today, but I did want to ask you about the recent news that came out about the redistricting commission that is charged with reforming congressional and state house and senate districts in Michigan. Yeah. No UP voices on it. Yeah. What do you think of that?
You know, I have to join my Republican colleagues and agree that it's disappointing. I certainly know that in my district in 2010, there is a big swath of Ishpeming Township cut out, goes, you know, right down through 41, and a lot of people don't know that they've been cut out until they go and vote. And I think a lot of people said, well, the UP, it won't change much, and they're not really affected like we are. And, you know, I think every UPer and certainly every legislator from the UP that goes down there, we fight day in and day out, all day long, to make sure that our voices are heard. And this is another instance where really it wasn't fair that they kind of took two strikes that they had on the Senate side to, you know, further limit the people that were on there, and they took two UP residents off.
I have a couple minutes left, and Lisa, Nick, if you have any last questions to get in with Representative Cambenzi, please do.
I'd love to jump back to unemployment here for a second. We've heard from some restaurants specifically since they've started to reopen and rehire who said they've experienced trouble hiring some people, partially because what they say is because of that unemployment additional added there at the federal level. What do you have to say about that, and to restaurants who say they're struggling to find people to work at this point?
This is one of the hardest things we've had to try and work through with the governor and her administration. And they did open up the WorkShare program, and I know a lot of restaurants that are doing this, that have reduced hours, are able to at least survive on that 50% capacity right now. And so I would encourage every restaurant to apply for that program. You need a minimum of, I think it's 3 employees, and you qualify. And what you can do is they can still collect that federal unemployment with reduced hours, but it enables you to bring your workers back and not have to worry about whether they're going to choose that federal unemployment or work. And knowing that the jobs are looking grim as we come out of this for a lot of those service industry jobs, I would just encourage everyone that has an opportunity to work to get out there and get back to work, and we'll help you.
Well, that's about the time that we have for today. I would like to take a moment to thank our guest, 109th District State Representative Sarah Cambenzi of Marquette. Also joining us on the media panel via Zoom has been Lisa Bowers, staff writer with the Marquette Mining Journal, as well as Nick Friend, reporter with WLUC-TV6. I'm Walt Lindela. Thanks for joining us today for WNMU-TV's Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television, in studios located in Elizabeth and Edgar Hardin Hall.